Thank you.
Okay, we're on Daf Samatet today. Please, everybody mute themselves. We're on Samatet of an Aleph. I'll begin on the top line. So we're talking about that a woman has a right to a nidunya, to a dowry, and if the father dies, so she still can claim the dowry, and we'll see how this works. So Tamali Rav the Rebbe Beni Chitei. So Rav propounded the following question to Rebbe Beni Chitei. Look at Rashi, the top line of Rashi. He sent him a social correspondence, and then in between the lines of the social correspondence, he posed this question. And Mefarshim want to say it's related to the din that that you don't write Torah Shabbal Peh. So he wrote it irregularly. In other words, they're trying to avoid writing down Torah Shabbal Peh. But believe that, or I'll come back to that later. So Tanli Rav the Rebbe Ben Yechite. If, again, the father's dead, the brothers inherit an estate, and the dowry has to come from that estate, but what if Shibdu, they encumbered the estate in some way, we'll define in a minute. So So Rav sends a letter off to Rebbe, and Rebbe Chia is sitting, Havayati Rebbe Chia Kamei. Rebbe Chia is sitting before Rebbe when he receives the letter. So Amar Lei, so Rebbe Chia says to Rebbe, Mahru o Mishkanu. Does he mean that they sold property? In other words, the brothers had property, but they sold it to other people. And is, if that's the case, is Rav inquiring whether the dowry can nevertheless be seized from the purchasers? It's like a shibud on the estate, or o Mishkanu. Or does he mean that they used it as a type of mashkon? And the Arsva said that according to the Shikim Kvetzet, it's not like mashkan to the surah. So in Bav Mitzia, Gemara has an idea that if a person lends money, so the borrower can give a piece of property to the lender, and the lender will take the payroll from the property during the course of a period of time, and he'll use the payroll to kind of lower the amount standing debt. So what was he talking about? Was it machru or mishkenu? So Amar Lei, so Rebbe says to Rebbe Chia, my nafmina, what difference does it make? Bein machru, bein shemishkenu, motzin leparnasah, motzin lemezonot. Whether they did it, or they sold it, or they use it as a mashkon, motzin leparnasa. Parnasa means the dowry. We can to seize the property to satisfy the dowry requirements for the daughters. They motzin lemizono, but for mizonot, which is support for the daughters and would be for the wife as well, we wouldn't do it that way. And we actually had this halakha. Remember yesterday, 10 lines from the bottom on some kind of days. Remember we had a question with Rav Huna. And Rav Huna said in his time, it was masim b'chol yom. It was something done daily. But apparently, it might not have been done daily in the earlier time with Rav and Rebbe. So the Gemara now asks on the fifth line, V'rav, yimachru kamabai le'nechav le'machru. So why is Rav being so ambiguous in this question? If he's interested in the case where they sold the property, so why doesn't he write explicitly, sold the property? Yimishkenu kamabai le'nechav, if he's interested in knowing when they use the properties of Mashkon, that's what's bothering him. Niftavle Mishkanu, so that he should write that. So the Gemara says, Rav, Tavot Tamabayalei. Rav actually was inquiring on both elements, whether they sold it or they used it as a Mashkon like Mashkat the Surah. But Savar, he, Rav, thought, Ikatinale Mahru, if I write Mahru, Hanicha Ishalakli Devotsiyim. So if I were to write, if they sell the property, can we seize it from the buyers? So if Rebbe responds to me, Motzin, we could, Kortkein Mishkanu, then I know the answer to Mishkanu, then certainly Mishkanu I could do. But, Yishalakli, but if he sends back to me the message, Ein Motzin, in other words, if I just write Machru, and he says we can seize it from the purchasers, so then I know that even Mishkanu you could seize, because Machru is like, I'm saying goodbye to it. Mishkanu is like temporarily goodbye to it. So if he says Machru I can seize from the buyer, certainly Mishkanu I could seize from the lender. But he says, but Yishalakli Ein Motzin, but if he were to send to me the response that I'm not allowed to seize the property if you sell it, Akati Mishkanu Kamabayli, then I don't know what the answer is by Mishkanu. He says, Ikativinalei, and then and conversely, if I write to Rebbe, this is Rob's thinking, if I write to Rebbe Mishkanu, if they use it as a mashkon, Yishalakli the Ein Motzin, if he says, no, you can't seize the property if they use it as a mashkon, the way that I described it before. Certainly Machru, in other words, Mishkano, it's being used the Mashkano, but just for a temporary period of time. So certainly Machru, I can't be Motzi. Yishalakli Motzian, But if he sends to me that I could be motzi, a kati makru kama bayali, so I don't know makru. So Rav thought, echtov lei shivdu. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to write, and it doesn't seem like he wanted to write a lot of words. He could have spelled everything out. He wants to be, I'll come back to this, it really could be to the Torah Sheval Peh. He doesn't want to write, like, Torah Sheval Peh down. And so he says, echtov lei shivdu, I'll use the term shivdu. He says, damash mahachi, mash mahachi. It sounds both ways. And then he, Rebbe, and if you look at Rashi, on the fourth white line, damash mahachi, mash mahachi, who and Rebbe, sheyashiv shubato, when he responds to my question, Yifareish im shneim shavin lo. He'll explain if they're both the same. He says, "Oh, yesh chiluk beinehem," or there's a distinction between either one of them. Uma omer al shneim, and he'll explain what he holds by both ones. So he still feels the best way to pound the question is say shibnu. Let me. I just want to do a few more lines in the Gemara, and then all right. Let me pause for a second. Who's got questions? How does anything did so far? What's up, Eldad? In other words, the brothers inherit the whole estate, but the daughters have a right to claim the nidunya. They still have. Well, that's what. No. So right. Well, Rebbe says in the end, according to Rebbe, whether they sell it or they or mamashkin it, then they could seize the property. So in the end, we know the answer according to Rebbe's vote. But Rav wasn't sure what the answer to that question was.
Could we hear the question?
Okay, just one second. No. Let's go back. Okay. Odate is asking me about Machru and Mishkenu. So when you say, in other words, let's say they sell the property and now there's no estate left, and now the only property we got has been sold, and now we need to collect the dowry. So what rights and remedies are exist for the daughters? So Rebbe's saying that whether they sell it, we can go to the buyers and seize it. In other words, it's like a pre-existing security on the property. It's like a security lien on the property. And in other words, it's a shibud. In other words, not a mashka. In other words, like this. In other words, if I own property, but I owe money to X, and I sell you the property. So if my according to halacha, if my outstanding debt to X is in writing, then you take the property subject to any claims that X may have against the property. Right. That's the halacha psuka. But it means X should come to me first. But if I don't have assets, he's going to come to you. So here, when a person writes his ksuba, we had it already. That's one of the nine ksuba that he's going to, take care of the daughters. That's what we understand. Okay. Anyway, so that's he sells it. And Mishkenu is he has a different arrangement. Let's say he's borrowing money, but he gives the land to the lender for a period of time where the lender's going to take the payroll. And then that's going to like cut back on the amount that he owes each year. That's the case. All right. Now, somebody else had a question? Yeah, what's up, Rafi? Right. No, again. So Bisman Chazal, if you do, let's say, a loan in writing, so it's understood that it gets publicized, and I made him sign it. In other words, the people generally know about it. Once there are aid demanded, the people generally, in other words, you have to ask. You have to do your homework, ask around. And people will say there's such a thing that exists. That's the way I would say it goes. All right. Now, let me finish this sugya, and then I'll come back to the thing about the writing between lines and the whole thing with that. Okay, now. All right, everybody needs to mute themselves because I hear somebody are unmuted. Let me help. Okay, now you're all help. Okay, now. All right, let's see back in the Gemara. So now, We're up to Rabbi Yochanan. Okay, so we said that according to Rebbe, whether it's parnasa or mizonot, we're motzi from the kucho, right? Mosin the parnasa. What I'm saying, I'm sorry, I didn't say it correctly. You're right. I'm sorry, I didn't say right. Bein makru bein mishkan motzi in the parnasa, right? For parnasa we're motzi, and for mizonos we're not motzi. But for parnasa we're motzi with this makru mishkan. Reb Yochanan amar echadze vechadze ein motzien. Reb Yochanan says we're not motzi on either one. So again, so it's complete machloket. So Rebbe says with a makru or mishkanu we're motzi, and Reb Yochanan says we're not motzi. We're not motzi. Let me just try to get this right. Echadze b'chadze means whether it's parnasa or mizonot. So according to Rebbe, we're motzi for parnasa, we're not motzi for mizonot. And according to Rebbe Yochanan, we're not motzi for either one. Echadze b'chadze ain't motziim. So the remedies are much reduced. So Ibailahu, Rabbi Yochanan lo shmielei had Rabbi. Was it that Rabbi Yochanan had never heard of Rabbi's ruling? And Rabbi Yochanan lives like right after Rabbi. In other words, he's like first generation Mariam, Rabbi's last generation of Tanaim. He says, "V'in shmielei hav makabalei." Had he heard Rabbi's ruling, he would have accepted Rabbi's ruling. Odilma shmielei v'lo makabalei. Or maybe he heard Rabbi's ruling, but he didn't accept Rabbi's ruling. That's the Gemara's Masupak. So Tashma, so the Gemara tries to bring a proof, and the proof is going to be that Rabbi, we think, did hear of it. I mean, Rabbi Yochanan did hear of it. De Itmar, it was stated, a person dies, let's say Yaakov dies, he leaves two daughters and a son. Daughter number one gets married after the death of the father, and she takes 10% of the estate as her dowry. Fine. And the second daughter didn't get married yet and wasn't able to take the 10% dowry. But the son now dies, and nobody leaves any yorshim. So now the whole estate is going to go to the two daughters. So I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says, Shnia Bitra, that the second daughter who never collected the dowry has waived her rights to the dowry by getting the estate. In other words, it's like water under the bridge. So just one second. So I'm Rabbi Hanina, now we think within Rabbi Yochanan, we're going to view like the Yerusha. So it means the daughter has no claim against her sister her dowry. In other words, her dowry would have come from the estate. Let's say the estate is $1 million left in the estate. So if she got married when the brother was alive, she'd be entitled to 10% of that, be $100,000. Now the brother's dead. Now she and her sister split the each get $500,000. So the Gemara thinks she's got no claim against the sister for half the dowry, whatever it would be. So we think that the Yerusha is like a purchase. We think like Yarshan in the state is like a purchaser. So the Gemara says, so I'm Rabbi Hanina. Rabbi Hanina says, Gidolonizu Amro. He says, Rabbi Hanina is giving a different opinion. Rabbi Yochanan says, tough luck. You know, it's like water under the bridge. Forget about it. So I'm Rabbi Hanina, Gidolonizu Amro. What do you mean? They said even more than that. He says that we can even go to a purchaser and take the money for the dowry from the purchaser. He says, and you saying that the second daughter is like, you can kiss it goodbye, wave it. Now, the proof that the Gemara is bringing, we're trying to find out, did Rabbi Yochanan know of Rabbi's ruling? If it was true that Rabbi Yochanan never heard of Rabbi's ruling, namely, Rabbi Yochanan should have said to Rabbi Hanina, Man Amr, who says that? In other words, Rabbi Hanina says the halakha, which is what Rebbe said. That's what Rebbe says. So if it was novel to Rabbi Yochanan should have said, who's the one who says that? So from the fact that he didn't say who said that, we think that Rabbi Yochanan was familiar that Rebbe said it and nevertheless rejected it. That's what we think. So the Gemara says, Leolam lo shmiele. No, I could say that indeed Rabbi Yochanan had not heard of it when he made his ruling. But later on, when he did hear of it, which was after, in other words, before he had this conversation with Hanina, he did hear of it and he accepted Rebbe's ruling. But notwithstanding that, Bishani Hatam, notwithstanding that, he still held to his original ruling, the Ika Rebbe of Beta. In other words, Rebbe's ruling is that if somebody purchases the property, I can go to the purchaser and seize the property from them to satisfy the dowry. Here, the two daughters yarshin the whole estate. So he says that here, where she's like getting such a big piece of the estate, you got Rebbe Beta, under those circumstances, the Chachamim did not provide her with a remedy to keep Isur Nechasim. He says, look in Rashi, he says, two Rashi, Vishani Hatam, around the 15th narrow line from the top, Vishani Hatam, Havlo Hadrabe, Mimaita Amar Shni Bitra. He didn't, notwithstanding the fact that he later on heard what Rebbe ruled, but he didn't retract his ruling. Shem Rebek Baita, Shrinis Takra Harbe, she made like a bundle of money. She's getting half the Yerusha. So there, under those circumstances, Rabbi Yochanan felt that she can't get Easter Nechassim. She has no right of claim against her sister. Or, you know, to take off the Easter Nechassim, then divide the estate would be the way it would work. So if the estate is $1 million, she would take off 10% and then divide it up. So he says, unless he just three more lines, and that'll be it. Last narrow line. Amarli Rabbi Yemar the Rabashi. So Rabbi Yemar says, Rabashi, Elamiata, Ashtam and Tiba Alma, let's say after the death of the father, a woman, one of the daughters, whatever, she was not married, she finds a metziah, she finds a valuable metziah, finds a diamond ring. So now she's taking in money. So she, does that mean she waives her right to Yisra Nechasim? No, I'm saying if she gets the rebach from the estate, then she has no claim to the Yisra Nechasim. She's got other money coming in from elsewhere. That's a whole different parsha. Okay, let's just summarize what we did. Then we'll take some questions, comments, and thoughts, and I'll say some things on Sahara, what we did. So the basic idea we're talking about are, what are the rights and remedies of the parties if the father dies and the daughters need to get married and they need a nidunya? So according to Rebbe rules, and we saw in yesterday's daf, Rav Huna later on held the same way, motin the parnasave, motin the mezonot, that we can go to purchasers later on and seize the property to satisfy the nidunya, but we can't go to satisfy mizonot. We can't use it for mizonot purposes. And then we said, though, but according to Rabbi Yochanan, now again, Rebbe holds, it doesn't make a difference of Bachru or Mishkanu, we're going to be most of the Parnasa. But Rabbi Yochanan says, Rabbi Yochanan says, we're not motzi for either one. So we said, did Rabbi Yochanan, you know, hold from know about Rebbe or not know about Rebbe's ruling? So the Gemara brings out an incident where a man died. He left two daughters and a son. Daughter number one got a dowry. Daughter number two never got a dowry. And then the son died. And then the two daughters yarshan the whole estate. So Rabbi Yochanan said the second daughter waives her right to the dowry. So Rabbi Chanina says, what do you mean? It's like the same thing the parnasah in the mezonot. So the Gemara says it could be that when Rabbi Yochanan made his original ruling, he had never heard of Rebbe, what Rebbe had said. But notwithstanding that, and then when he heard what Rebbe said, he was mekabel it. So in other words, the fact that Rabbi Yochanan said echad zeh v'echad zeh, what did he say? What was his statement? Ein motzien. It could be that he reversed himself. You know, that was before. When he heard Rebbe, he accepted it. But even if he accepts Rebbe, with the case with the two daughters, he can still hold by his original ruling, because by the two daughters, he's getting a bundle of money from the estate. And under those circumstances, Rabbi Yochanan says the coming more attacking that she has the right to seek the dowry. That's the basic idea that we're doing with the whole thing. Okay, now who's got questions, comments, thoughts on anything I said so far? Okay, now let me just.
So she does have a right. She does have a right, according to the Chachamim, to go for half the dowry from the other sister.
No, that's not what we said. That's just
what did you just say?
Again, it's just the opposite of what I said. We said
that's
we said
what I that, thought before. I think you said
No. Okay, so we're saying within Rabbi Yochanan that Rabbi Yochanan could have accepted Rebbe's ruling, that which is motzin the parnasa. We normally would extrapolate for parnasa from a later sold property, but nevertheless, with the estate, Rabbi Yochanan could still hold by his original ruling that she's waived the rights. The second sister has waived her rights because she got, you know, she got all this money from the estate. Under those circumstances, the chamim were not mitakin Easter nechasim. All right.
Okay, you now, used the word waive the rights last night and tonight. What is she actually doing to waive those rights? Just accepting your
Misha no, no, rights to an adjunct? It means by act of law she's waived.
Act of law, okay.
Okay, okay. Okay, now, all right, now. All right, now he's got a whole piece here about sometimes when we find things from earlier Rishonim that the later ones didn't know about. How significant is it? And it turns on this thing. They said that you see that Rabbi Yochanan, maybe he didn't hear about what Rabbi heard. If he would have heard what Rabbi Yochanan said, what Rabbi had said, maybe he would have had a different opinion. And that comes up. But let me talk about the thing about the between the lines. So the Maharam Shif explains in Rashi that Rab was knowing intentionally to write it between the lines. The Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral Torah, you're not allowed to write down. But then when the generations got later, you know, weaker, so then they had a heter on Eit Lasot Lashem Eferu Torah Techa. So in the time of Rav, this Isur was still in full strength. Therefore, Rav didn't want to write his question in a normal fashion. He did it in a shinui. And we could say, like you said, why didn't he spell everything out? We could say that as well. So so he says the words of the Maharam Shif bring us to, he says, to clarify which during which Tufa did they have the Isur of writing Torah Shebaal Peh. So this issue is telling me with a known machloket between the Eitani Olam. The Rambam writes that Rabbi Yehuda Kadosh, Besara Mishnah, he wrote, he was the one who put the Mishnah in writing. That's the way Rambam learns. So Rebbe is one who, you know, first wrote down Torah Shebaal Peh. And so in his opinion, during the period of Rebbe, which is three generations after the Korban Beis HaMikdash, the Easter was permissible. But there are other Rishonim who explain that Rebbe just formulated the Mishnayot and he never wrote them down because his tekufa, the Easter was still in effect. That's the Maharas Chayas holds that way. So we say that Rebbe, you know, wrote the Mishnayot, the one Ram in Akhenavi wrote down, write it down. In the Maharas Chayas, no, it was still given over all, you know, orally, but he formulated what the words are and everything else and which ones were part of the Mishnayot. So therefore, the Maharam Shif wants to say it could be that even the Tekufa Rebbe, the Easter had not yet been lifted. So he says, then based on the sheet of the Rambam, that Rebbe is the one who wrote down everything. So the Gra explains in his Hakama to Parashulchan, the famous line of the Gemara, Hisuri Mechser Bahaki Tani. It's as if there are words missing in the Mishnah or the Brisa, and this is the way we should learn it. He says, he wants to say it doesn't mean that the version got corrupted over the years, the Gra explains, but based on the sheet of the Rambam, that Rebbe wrote the Mishnayot, we can explain that intentionally he left out certain words because he wanted to be Mamayid and the Torah Shebaal Peh that's being written. I just want to write down the bare minimum. So he didn't write down like everything, you know, dotting every I and crossing every T. Now, it's interesting, the Chasam Sofer wants to say that writing Torah Shebaal Peh wasn't, you know, completely given a green light. The Easter is left in its full strength, and you're only allowed to write Torah, Divrei Torah, if it's Lishma. In other words, Eit La'asot Hashem. In other words, your intention is, you know, Lishma. In other words, I think the way the Chasam Sofer says it like this: like, let's say I want to write a sefer, and I want to write a sefer just so people should know my chachma, something like that. So I think the Chasam Sofer holds that that's like an Easter. You're violating Eit La'asot Hashem. You're violating the Easter of writing Torah and Shebaal Peh. Because the Easter of writing Torah Shebaal Peh was only lifted when you're doing Torah Lishma. I'm trying to, you know, continue on to perpetuate the Torah. If I'm to have other motivations, it's not lifted. Okay, that's Tahara with all that. Okay, I'm going to move on unless anybody has questions. Okay, let's move on. Now, all right, now we're running a little bit late, so I have to keep moving, and I apologize for the speed. All right, now, we're on the third wide line on Samach Tenem and Aleph, 69A, the third wide line. So Amar said, but your reshet have you. So he wants to say the daughter, vis-a-vis her nidunya, vis-a-vis her dowry, we view her as a yoreshet, as an heir. He says, Amar le Ravashi la Meimar, ilu bar le Saluka b'zuzay, hachan amu l'mas Saluka. So if the brothers who inherit the estate, in other words, they want to give her a bag of money and say, listen, we don't want anything to do with you. Here's the bag of money. Here's your, in other words, if she's the yoreshet. So he says, we can't get rid of her. In other words, if you're yoreshet, yoreshet, you have a piece in every asset. In other words, If I'm entitled to a piece of the estate, I have, like, you know, out of every asset, if you have, you know, whatever exists there, I have elements. He says, so as the Lamas and Saluka, so Amar Le'in. He said, yeah, in other words, I want to give her a bag of money. They say, we'll give you Green Acre. They can't get rid of her. Amalian said, right. So Ravashi Amar, says the daughter is not a Yoreshet, but rather Balakhov. You are, for halakhic purposes, the creditor. So even our main, so if he's a creditor, then we could pay her, give her whatever, and say, you know, Gekis Otei. Even Amemar, who originally had said that she's Yoreshet, and we're talking about Bizvi the dowry, he was closer from it. We're on around the sixth very wide line on Sabbath Penim and Aleph. He says, the Amar Rabbi Yumi Bereid Rabbi Chuming, Havakim Kamid Amemar. This Rabbi Yumi said, I was standing for Amemar, who's the one who previously said that she's Yoreshet. Yeah, Taya Hayitzel Kamei. A woman came before him, David Kabai Easter Nechasim. She was demanding her 10% of the estate for a dowry. And I saw that Amemar's opinion was that if they would have wanted to pay her the money, they'd get rid of her. He says, why? Because I heard from her brothers, the brothers were saying to her, he says, if we would have money, we can get rid of you with money, the ishtik. And he, Amemar, was silent from the fact that all the Bali Dinam are there, and they're making a statement, and Amemar wasn't disagreeing with them. Sounds like Amemar subscribed to the idea that they could have given her a bag of money. And I saw that they want to say that, like you see from here, like in a din, like if a Dayan's there and somebody's making a statement and he doesn't agree with it, he should say, I don't agree with that. So now that everybody agrees that she is a creditor vis-a-vis the estate with the Eastern Akasim, the Abba with the Acha, is she a creditor vis-a-vis the father or vis-a-vis the brother? Now we say creditor, doesn't mean that she's really a creditor because the father was not obligated to give her a dowry. The father could say, I don't want to give you a dowry and things like that. So she's not really a creditor, but it means when we view her coming to the estate now after the death of the father, do we view her as a creditor as if she were a creditor of the father or as a creditor of the brothers? Then we'll see what the nafkamina is in 1 minute. So the word is Lamai nafkamina. What's the nafkamina? Whether she's a creditor of the father or a creditor of the brother. So in other words, the father has the estate, he's got the $1 million estate. And then the father dies, leaves it to his two sons. So do we view her, and now she's the daughter, she's claiming her Easter Nechasim. Do we view her as the father's creditor or as the creditor to the brothers? So this is the Mikvah Lebeinoni Shilabashua, whether she can collect, like there's A, B, and C land. You have Edith, Beinoni, and Ziburi. Edith is the best land, Beinoni is the middle land, and Ziburi is the worst land. So the Mikvah Lebeinoni Shilabashua, if she's a Balachov of the brothers, her brothers, then she can collect the Beinoni without a Shua. He says, Ziburi Beshua. But if she's a creditor of the father, so it's like collecting the debt from the father, from the Atomium, you have to take a shrew and you only collect from the Zibur at the worst land. So mice, which way does it come out? So Tashma, the Ravina Agbe Lebrati, the Ravashi, Ravina collected, well, on behalf of the daughter of Ravashi, Umar Berei, the Ravashi, Beinoni, Shilabashlo Beshua. So in other words, the daughter of Ravashi wanted to collect Yisra Mechasim, and it came before Ravina the Din. Ravashi presumably wasn't alive anymore. And he permitted her to collect the Beinoni Shlo Beshua. In other words, that means that we view her as a creditor of the brothers. And then we braid Rav Sama, braid Ravashi, Ziburit Beshua. And then from the grandson of Ravashi, and it was from, in other words, her nephew, in other words, the woman's nephew, in other words, one of the brothers had died already. So the estate passed down to another generation. So from the second generation, he permitted to collect only from the Ziburit with the Shua. In other words, one he's collecting from, in other words, we're viewing it as a claim against the brothers. So Ravashi, let's say, has two sons. And one son had predeceased. So, yeah, the Pisha Balakov Shal Bibhaita Shua Chia. Right. So now, but he left the son himself. So now the estate is passing down like to two sons, but to one son and a grandson. So vis-a-vis the son, she's a balakov of the son. That's her brother. She's a balakov. She's from the brother. She can elect Beinoni, the B land, and she elects Shlobishua. But vis-a-vis her nephew, then she's like a balakov of her father, the father of the nephew. So for the vis-a-vis the nephew, it's Guri Bishua. So Shalach play Reb Nathania, Reb Reb Yosef, Reb Reb Huna Zuta, Mineherdoa. So Rav Nechemia sends this message to Rav Barav Huna Zuta. And when this woman comes before you, I want you to, you know, collect the 10% of the estate, afilu mitzrobola, even from the mitzrobola is like the area underneath where the millstones are. It means that I'm going to view that as karka, so collected from the karka. Amar Rav Ashi, Yavina be Rav Kahana, Rav Ashi says, when we were in the base medrash for Rav Kahana, we would collect even from like the rental that would come due from real property. The idea being that they're only going to collect from the real property. Rav Anan, the Rav Huna. Now, Rav Anan sends a message to Rav Huna, and the message goes like this: Huna Chavrin, Huna are our colleague. Now, it's going to be Rav Huna is going to take umbrage that he refers to him as Huna Chavrin. He says, Huna Chavrin, Shalom, Ki Ad Yahait Lekamach. When this woman comes before you, Agba Easter Nichse, I want you to collect 10% of the estate for her. Habiyati Rav Sheshet Kameh. So Rav Sheshet was sitting before Rav Huna when he received the message. So Amar Leim, and then Rav Huna said to Rav Sheshet, Zil Eimalei, I'm giving you a mission, Rav Sheshet. I want you to go to Rav Anan and say to him exactly what I'm telling you. Uvshamti Heiman Lo Amar Leim. And whoever doesn't follow this instruction, you're going to be in need if you don't follow my instructions. He says, and the instructions are, you say, Anan Anan, say to Anan Anan. That was his name, Rav Anan. Anan Anan. He says, Nimit Karkai, only Metalflin. Do you want me to collect the money from Karka or from Metalflin? Uman Yati Beimar Zeicha Bereisha. And who is the one who sits at the head of the table of Beimar Zeicha? So Beimar Zeicha means the Beis HaAvel, but we'll see in a minute what's going on with this. So it comes out from a farshim to say, or one of the farshim says like this, that he first was using like a, not derogatory, but a kind of, you know, impolite way of referring to Rav Anan. He says, Anan, Anan. Even though Rav Anan had referred to him, Huna Chavrin, but Huna Chavrin is less insolent than Anan, Anan. You know, Anan, Anan, repeat the name twice, that's not so good. And Beimar Zeicha, he was merames to him. So the Avel is the one who sits at the head of the table. But the Avel sits at the head of the table, even though he may not be the most learned person in the group. So he was merames to him that even though you're like the Rav in that town, it doesn't mean you're the most learned person in the place. Okay. So he says to him, so Azam is interesting because Rav Sheshet, what do we know about Rav Sheshet, Michael? You like to say this. All right, anyway. What do we know about Rav Sheshet? Anyway, he was blind. So it's interesting that I assume it's interesting that it could be, I don't know. So let's take a look. So Gemara says, Azal Rav Sheshet Kami Rabbanan. So Rav Sheshet went before Rabbanan. Amar Lei Marav. So first he has a little preamble before he makes his statement. He says, Marav, you're a great master, he says Rabbanan. Rav Huna, Rabbe Rabba. And Rav Huna is, you know, is right, he's a bigger Talmud Chacham. He says he gave him the instructions to give me this message under penalty of nidu if I don't, and more not for that I would not say this to you. So he wants to sort of set up, right, and that's what Rashi says. He says if you look at the second very wide line downstairs, Amalei Mar Rabba Atam Rabuna Rabcha. He says Amalei Mar Rabba Atam. You're great. Rav Huna Rabcha, and Rav Huna is your Rebbe. Ulafaisa Amar Lo Kach. He went to try to like appease him a little bit. So Yechos Alav, Al Shnas the Shliach B'Davar, that he shouldn't get angry at him that he's a Shliach for this. The Mori Panim Shal Korcho Nas the Shliach B'Kach. So he's saying like I was forced to do this. And here the message comes. Three lines to the bottom. Anan Anan Mi Mekarkayim Mekalflay. Anan Anan is from the Karkayim Mekalflay. What do you want me to do? Uman Yati Beimar Zeicha Bereisha. Who's the one who sits at the head of the table at the Beimar Zeicha? So Azal Rabbanan Lekami Demar Ukba. Rabbanan went before Mar Ukba. Amalei Chazimar Hechi Shalach Li Rav Huna. He says, listen to what he sends. Listen to this message he sends me. This is, in other words, Rabbanan felt aggrieved upon receiving this message. So he goes to Mar Ukba. He says, listen to what he sends to me. Anan Anan. That's the way he refers to me. And again, we explained that Anan Anan is, I think, the Maram Shef. That the double name is like more, you know, is insulting to Anan Anan. It's like worse than Huna Chavrin. He says, "Va'od Marzika l'shalchli lo yadana my niu." I don't know what Marzika means. So Amalei, Amalei Ize turned page the top line of the days. He says, "Wait, tell me the whole story. Like, you know, like when you can't hear half a story. You know, like in other words, if you look at anything in court cases that way also, even with photographs, films, and things like that. Like, what came before? What came after? Let me hear the whole story. So he says, tell me now, or tell me easy to be now, or tell me friend, exactly what happened. So Amarle, haki v'haki havamaisa. He still went through the whole thing. This is what I sent him. This is what he sent back. Amarle, gavrul yada mainihu marzifa, shalach le rabuna, huna chavrin. He says, the person doesn't even know what a Beit Marzeicha is, and you're sending to Rav Huna, Huna Chavrin, Huna, our colleague, and so it's like, aren't you being presumptuous that way? So the Gemara says, my Marzeicha. What is Marzeicha? So Avil. Marzeicha means an Avil, a mourner. The thief, Komar Hashem, Al-Tavo Beit Marzeicha, Domer. So the Gemara quotes the pasuk from Yirmiyah, from the book of Jeremiah. Hashem says to Yirmiyah, don't go to the house of the mourner. It's a siman that there are going to be so many people mourning, so many people are going to be dying, that nobody's going to be like doing through all the, the protocol for mourners, because everybody's going to be a mourner. So So now Rabbi Yabau is filling in what the question was. He says, in other words, the question that Rav Huna had propounded to him was, who sits on the rosh of the Beit Marzeicha? So I told you, one of the Mefarshim wants to say he was just alluding to trying to send him a message, like the Avil sits at the rosh table, even though he's not the most prominent person, and you are maybe the rabbi in that town, but doesn't mean you're the most prominent person. So he says, where do we know that an Avil is one who sits at the head of the table when he's in mourning? Shnemar evchardar kam eshev rosh v'shom kamelach begedud kasher avilim yinachem. It's from the pasuk of the book of Eov, the book of Job. So Job is going through a lot of travails, tribulations, and he says, "I remember the good old times." He says, "I would sit at the head of a table like a king with his whole cohort." Like avelim yinachem. So the way the Gemara is darshing out, like an avel would sit at the head of the table. So the Gemara says yinachem aferimashma. That sounds like that the comforters sit at the head of the table, not the Avil says, Kasher Avilim Yinachem, but the comforters would sit at the head of the table. So Amar Nachmar Yitzchak, Yinu Cham Kiv. In other words, I could read the word Yinachem as Yinu Cham, and Rashi goes through a whole thing, like but Yinu Cham, I could see the one who is comforted, which is the Avil. But the point being, right, and we have a remiss from the Pesukim that way. And Marzutra Amar Hacha. Marzutra says that he's the remnant from a different pasuk. It says, "Vesar Mirzach Shruchim." That the excessive mourning will approach. So he says, excessive mourning will approach. So Sar is to approach. Asura Navi Red Amare Agdol Zemel Guli Varistan. So Basar approach Mirzak, the one who's in mourning, Struchim, excessive mourning, like Serach HaOdeif, like with the Mishkan, like the flap that went over. He says, so that Pasuk is in Amos. So he says, Mar Bizak, in other words, he wants to say, Mar Mirzak, is Mar Bizak the one who's bitter, and Zak is the one who's detached. So Mar Bizak, now says Sar LeStruchim. He's a prince over the exalted ones, the Struchim. The people come to comfort him. But the point is, he's Barosh. So Amarava, Hilchatami, Karkaivalo Mikhtalfa. The halacha is that we collect the property. This would be with the dunya. The payments, he says, for wife and daughters. So I guess it would be also the mizonos, he says. Yeah, you're right. So the money we collect from the Karkaivalo Mikhtalfa, we only collect from the real property, not from the Kaplan. Bain the mizone, whether it's mizonot for the wife, the widow, and the daughters. Bain the ketubah, for anything else that's written in the ketubah. Bain the parnasa, or the dowry. All those things we would pick up. One thing I want to say before. I mentioned about the dowry being in the ketubah. I have to look at that a little bit. I'm not sure the dowry is in the ketubah. But notwithstanding that, they do have a right to go to the lekuchot and pick it up. I guess it's just knowledge that people would give out the dowry to daughters. Okay, we have 90 seconds for questions, comments, and thoughts. What's up?
Question.
Okay, 1 minute. Daniel, then you. What's up?
Because Abraham, and they tell us because he called him twice because he loves him. Yeah. Now you say twice is derogatory?
Well, the thing is like this. It's you're saying Anan without Rab Anan. So it's without the honorific. And he's saying it twice. So that's like, you know, right. That's what I assume. Okay. All right. What's up, Fern? What do you got?
Two things. If there is no karka, and there's only metaltolin, does she get from the metaltolin?
It doesn't sound like it. No. What's the next?
Whoa, that's terrible. The other thing is.
Yeah, the karka. If this karka, she can go after the purchasers, but not from the metaltolin. What else? What's next?
The shvua. I didn't understand that. What shvua is she taking?
No, it means like this. If I come to an estate and I say your father owed me money, so before I can collect from the estate, I have to take a shvua that indeed the money is outstanding because the father's not around. It's like the
parole
evidence, not parole evidence. But if I'm claiming a claim from the, in other words, if I'm a baal chol
from the brothers
themselves, so then I can collect without a shvua.
Right, but they were talking about the woman taking a shvua if she wanted the Idit Sipuri, if she wanted better stuff.
In other words, if she's collecting as a baal chol from Yitomim, she's only entitled to collect Ziburit. In other words, if it was a debt that the father owed, she could collect only from the great sea karka. If it's a debt that they owe, she collects from the Beinonit.
Okay.
It's the same amount of money, but it's different karka. Okay, I got to keep moving. I'll go very quick, then we got to run. No. In other words, let's say, Reuven purchased the karka. He purchased the karka 5 years ago. The seller dies. Now the daughter has no dowry. There's nothing in the estate. The daughter can come to Reuven, the purchaser, and say, that karka you bought 5 years ago from my father, I want that property to satisfy my dowry. That's the... Okay, I got to keep moving. I'm sorry. That's it. You got to go. Okay, yeah, we're on the 10th line, and I have to run down. No questions till I pause, okay? So we're in the Mishnah on some of 10 days. So Manitin, Hamashlish Mao Labito, if a person during his lifetime, he designates money that to go to his daughter for Nidunya. He says, Behio merit, and in other words, he tells it like an administrator or a trustee, I'm giving you this money for my daughter, and then when the time comes, I want you to buy property and then give it to her husband for her future husband. He says, Behio merit, Neman Bali Alai. And she says, and the way Mepharshim say it, even though Rashi seems to say differently than this, after the Erusin, he says, I trust my husband, give the money to my husband. Meir says the shlish should follow what the father instructed him to do and disregard the instructions from the daughter. He should follow the late father's instructions. Rabbi Yossi Omer, b'china la sadeh. He says, look, what is he going to do with it? Buy a field. He wrote Salamokra. Let's say he would have bought the field and she wants to sell the field. So she's running the show at this point. She would be able to sell the field. So Mela, if that's what she wants, you do what she wants. So you didn't buy a field yet, but she's the balance, so follow her instructions. But we're talking about if she's a gedola, about Biktana in Masik Tana Klum. If she's a Ktana, then we're going to ignore it. And we'll have to clarify all these shikot. And let's do the Mishnah because the Gemara is going to go to Brisa, and then we'll elaborate and hopefully be clarifying it. So Gemara and Tana Rabbanan, but this Brisa elaborates on our Mishnah. Amashish Mal Lakatano, if a person, a father, before his death, he doesn't need money that will be given, you know, for his son-in-law. In other words, to buy a field for his daughter. In other words, the idea is, I'm designating Reuven to buy Green Acre or whatever field he finds and then give it as the dowry for my daughter to the husband. He says, and she says, let's give him the money. Let's be done with this. After Nisuin, she's completely within her rights. But if it's after Erusin, then he's subject to whatever the father told him, according to Remeir. So according to Remeir, the key issue is it after Erusin or after Nisuin? If it's after Erusin, he should do exactly what the father instructed. If it's after Nisuin, then do whatever the daughter says to do. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Rabbi Yossi says, Hagdola, Beimena Nisuin, Beimena Erusin, or Rashup Yadah. Rabbi Yossi says, if she's a Gdola, she's an adult already, so listen to her. he says, Kitana, but if she's a Kitana, then you follow the instructions. So it means like this. We have Machloket Tanan, the father left money for the daughter, and he gave instructions to an administrator to buy karka for her dowry. So according to Reb Meir, who's the first opinion, it was mentioned in the Mishnah and in the Braisa, the key element seems to be whether it's Erusin or Nisuin. If the daughter says after Erusin, I trust my husband, give him the money, then you follow that. If it's after, excuse me, you don't follow it because you only follow what the father says. But it's after Nisuin, then we follow what she says. So it's Erusin and Nisuin according to Reb Meir. According to Reb Yossi, the key element seems to be, is she Ketana or a Gedola or a Ketana? If she's a Gedola, we listen to her. Ketana, we don't listen to her. So now, we don't know everything that I just said with clarity. My Benayu, what's the nafkamina between the two Shitot? Now, we think right now that Rebbe Meir holds, we think, that even after Nisuin, if she's a Ketana, we would listen to her. That's what we think. So, Ilema, Ketana, and Nisuin, he could be Benayu. So maybe, when one nafkamina is a Ketana after Nisuin, we think that Rebbe Meir would say it's after Nisuin, listen to her. Rebbe Meir Savar Harashup Yada, Rebbe Meir holds that she's running the show already. But Rebbe Yossi Lemar, Filma Nisuin, Nami, Yidoli, and Ketana Lo. And then Rebbe Yossi says, no, even after Nisuin, if she's a Ketana, we're not going to listen to her. So Ema Seifa, but let's look at the Seifa of the Mishnah that we did above, of Abba Ketana in Ma Seik Ketana Klum. The Mishnah said that the actions of a Ketana are nothing. Haman Ketani Lo, who taught that line in the Mishnah? Yilema Rebbe Yossi, if we'll say that Rebbe Yossi is the one who taught that line, so Rebbe Yossi, and that's what it looks like from the Mishnah, because Rebbe Yossi is the second opinion in the Mishnah. But I already know he holds that way from an earlier line in the Mishnah. The Amar Rebbe Yossi, b'chi eina el sadeh b'hi rotza l'mochra harei mechura me'ashav. So Rebbe Yossi says, if it were a field and she wanted to sell it, so she's a gedola, she could sell the field. So the Gemara says, gedola d'batn z'vinei in, tana d'labat z'vinei hi lo. So it seems like that he's saying that a gedola runs a show, Tana can't. So I know already that he holds that way. El Rameir he. So you must say that line goes within the Shita Tana Rameir. But he's three extra Mahak Kitani. It's as if there are words missing in the Mishnah. This is the way we should understand the Mishnah. Yaseh Shalish Ma Shahushlash Biado, that the Shalish should do, that's Rebbe Meir. In other words, the woman says, I trust my husband, give him the bag of money. So the shlish should follow his instructions. If it's after the erusin, after nisuin, she's running the show. Follow her. That's only if she's a gedola. So that line about emasik tana klum, like, should fill in the earlier part of the Mishnah. So that's not the nafkamina, and I'll explain in 1 minute. The nafkamina between the two shitot is a gedola after erusin. So it means like this, that according to Rebbe Meir, the key issue was erusin or nisuin. So if she's a gedola after the erusin, we still don't listen to her. We listen to what the father instructed her. But after nisuin, we would listen to her. But according to the second opinion, which is Rebbe Yossi, he says that she's running the show. In other words, if she's a gedola, so gedola after erusin, she's still running the show. We should follow what she says. So let me just do one line that we'll summarize, okay? So Itmar, Rabbi Yudamar, Shmuel, halacha for Rabbi Yossi. So Shmuel says the halacha follows Rabbi Yossi, whose opinion says whether she's a gedola or not. Rabbi Amar, Rabbi Nachman, halacha for Rabbi Meir. The second way holds halacha follows Rabbi Meir. It looks like halacha follows Rabbi Meir, that he should follow the instructions of the father unless it's after nisuin. So again, let's just summarize. What? And gedola, right. So so we had machlok between Rebbe Meir and Rebbe Yossi, and it seemed to turn on two issues. According to Rebbe Meir, it turns on, is it after erusin or after nisuin? So after erusin, we don't listen to her, we follow the father's instructions. After nisuin, we do listen to her, provided she's a gedola, is the way we learned it. She's a gedola, then we listen to her. Just 1 second. And the Tana Rebbe Yossi says it's talui on whether she's a Ketana or a Gedola. If she's Ketana, we don't listen to her. If she's a Gedola, we do listen to her, and we listen to her even after the Erusin. So the Nafkamina Halach Lamaisa between the two of them is a Gedola after Erusin. That's the only point where they disagree. It's a Gedola after Erusin, So Rabbi Yossi says we listen to her instructions, and Rameir says we don't. We listen to what the father has to say. I don't have time. I have to finish the daf, and then I'll talk in a few minutes. Okay. So let's just go further in the Gemara. Now, all right, we're 5 lines from the bottom. Now, the Gemara picks up. This is really a piece of the Gemara from Masechet Tanit on Daf Chabav and Tanit, which we presumably had in Daf Yomi. It says, remember that Ilfa and Rabbi Yochanan decided to leave the Beis Medrash and try their fortunes in the business world. And then they were like eating underneath the wall, and Rabbi Yochanan hears two malachim speaking with one another, and hears one malach say to the other one that look like these two, they deserve death. We should push over the wall on them because leaving this like the eternal world and they're going like for the Gashmi world. And so Rabbi Yochanan says to Ilfa, did you hear anything? And Ilfa says, no. And he says, and one of them is destined to be like the Rosh, would be destined to be the Rosh Hashiva. So Rabbi Yochanan says to Ilfa, did you hear anything? And Ilfa says, no. So Rabbi Yochanan says, since I heard it and Ilfa didn't hear it, Mistava, they're talking about me, that I'm going to be the Rosh Hashiva. So Rabbi Yochanan turns around, he goes back and becomes the Rosh Hashiva. Ilfa goes into business. Then he comes back after a period of time, and he finds out that Rabbi Yochanan became the Rosh Hashiva, and Ilfa said, you know, gee, if I hadn't gone to business, I would be the Rosh Hashiva. And he says that my learning is up to stuff the way it was when I left, and we'll see in a minute. So the Gemara says, Ilfa talanafshi iskari d'machuta. He either like he hung on the mast of a ship, or with the arsenal had, he balanced himself on the mast of a ship, and he says, Amar hikadati damali milta debay ribchi of Raboshia. If somebody quotes a brisa from the Beis Medrash, Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Oshia, and I'm not able to extrapolate that same halacha from one of the Mishnayot, the filum is kari b'tavana. I'm going to like fall or jump from this mast, and I'm going to drown. That's what it sounds like. Now Rashi points out, if you look at the Rashi, it's in the, I can tell these Rashi's, they come from all over the place. It'd be nice if you could remember where they are. I wish I could remember where they are. So if you look at the 4 lines before we get to Rashi, I got to run. Amar kumadat hule klomar af pishalaki b'sfora, 2 lines before we get wide, lo shachakti tamudi. Even though I went to business, I didn't forget my learning. Yish b'edin the talking kol abraito shesid ribichi raboshia b'tosef shalahen. He says, I could be talking all the braisos that Reb Chiya and Reb Oshia had in their corpus of brises. Amin alehen, smach b'mishnatenu. I'm going to say there's a support for it in our Mishnah. Shalashah, Shasita Rebbe, l'haki nachet Reb Chiya and Reb Oshia, bishen ikar k'damin ba'alma. In other words, the main brises are from Reb Chiya and Reb Oshia. It's like we say, k'o manit lo minia bei Reb Chiya and Reb Oshia, lo tutu mina b'bei medrusha. Any brice that wasn't taught, in other words, the other brices, but any even like the more authoritative brice, Mishnah is more authoritative than brisa, but the brice to Rabbi Hirosh is more authoritative than other brices. So any brice that wasn't taught in the base of Rabbi Hirosh, you don't ask a question from it. So back in the Gemara, so he says, 4 lines to the bottom, Atu Saba, a certain old man came, we know wherever the Saba, so sometimes it's still Yoanavi. He says, Tanale, he said to him, he quotes from the brisa. Omer to Shekel Libanai B'Shabbat. If a person before his death says he leaves instructions, give my sons 1 shekel each week, in other words, for their needs. Uruyali Tehlehem Selah. Then after the death, he sees that based on prices and things like that, you know, inflation, the price of food has gone up, they had on the news tonight, that they really need to have a selah. In other words, a shekel is half a selah, they need to be doubled. No need to have a selah. So we could say that the trustee is authorized to give them a selah. Bimamar, but if the father said, "Al tadu lahem el a shekel. Don't give them more than a shekel. You don't need a little shekel. You only give a shekel." Bimamar, but if the father said, "Imeitu Yeshua cherem tachteim," if the father said, "If my sons die, then I want other people to yarshin, you know, to have sort of like the residuary estate." Bein shamar tenu, bein shamar al tenu. Whether he said, "Give them or don't give them," whatever language, ain't only him el a shekel. We only give a shekel because it's an estate. I want the estate to go to somebody else afterwards. So where did you learn that in the Mishnah? So Amar Lei, so he, this is Ilfa said, it's interesting, the word Ilfa means like to teach. He says, Amar Lei, Hamani, Reb Meir. He says, that's following Reb Meir, the Amar, Mitzvah L'Kayim Debrei Amei. And Rashi points out, that's inherent in our Mishnah. Because in our Mishnah, we have the opinion of the Tana Reb Meir, and Reb Meir said, Yaseh Shlish Mashuhu Shlash Biado, that the administrator should do as he was instructed, which is Mitzvah L'Kayim Debrei Amei. So the same thing here. So the second line of the Gemara, Amar of Tista, Amar Mar Utba, Hilkata, Bain Shamar Tnu, Bain Shamar Al Tnu, the halacha is, whether the person said give them a shekel or don't give them more than a shekel, we give them whatever they need. In other words, not whether he left the money to other people afterwards, but if that's all the language is, we give them everything. To the kids. So the Gemara says, but we just said, Lachva's Remeir, you should follow what the pastor said, or the decedent said. That applies to other things. Al-Baha, with this, where he was instructing to give them enough to support them, like for the food and things like that, he would have preferred that they get whatever they need. The fact that he said, you know, only give them half a sella, he didn't want the sons to like sit on their duffs and, you know, accept all the money from the father. He wanted to like energize them to work and make money. That's why he left out instructions. But if they need the money, we would give it to them. He looks so perplexed. All right. We only have 1 minute and then I got to run. Okay. So again, so Ilfa's on the... Okay, Ilfa's on the mass. So the Saba comes to him and says, the Brisa that says, leave out the second half of the Brisa. If the father leaves instructions, give my sons a shekel. So and then prices went up. We would give him a sella. He says, but if he said, don't give them more than a shekel, you can't give them more than a shekel. So he says, so where is that in the Mishnayot? So Ilfa says it's in our Mishnah here, Masechta Ketubos, from Reb Meir's opinion in the Mishnah. It's clear he doesn't say those words, but it's mitzvah l'kayim divrei amid. It's mitzvah to fulfill what the decedent wants, because we see when the father gave instructions concerning the dowry, the person according to Rameh should have fulfilled. That's it. Then the Gemara says that the halakha is that whether he said, give them a shekel, or don't give them more than a shekel, we would give them more than a shekel in both instances. Why? But it's a mitzvah l'kayim divrei amid. It means, because we normally would say that, but here we're entering the decedent's mind. We think the decedent would have wanted his sons to get more money if they needed. The reason the decedent said, don't give them more than a shekel, is he didn't want the sons to like plop all over on the couch and say, I got all my money here. He wants them to act. Okay, I got to run. It's late. I apologize. I got to go. Okay. Nice to see everybody. 1 second. Let me get